There's a new book out that people should know about. It's called Rediscovering America, and it's a book about the Christian meaning and the providential hand behind much of what makes up the stories that form the basis of our holidays. So, if you will, chapter after chapter after chapter, you see all sorts of different holidays on the American calendar. And Scott Powell, the author of this book, explains much of the significance of these holidays, including the Christian aspect. Well, we've already talked with Scott Powell on a previous segment on Vocal Point on this book, giving an overview. Today, we want to focus at least on a couple of the holidays and go into depth. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Scott, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
I'm great. It's great to be here with you, Jerry. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, let's go ahead and focus on Columbus Day. And by the way, it's very interesting to me. You and I happen to be recording this on Columbus Day, and nowadays there's a lot of people saying, no, we should call it Happy Indigenous Day, not Happy Columbus Day. Columbus used to be a hero. Today, he's a villain. What happened?
Well, he's still a hero when people really understand who he was. And Columbus is rather unique, not absolutely unique, but he was a great recorder of his of what was happening in his life. His thoughts, his actions were recorded in diaries and logbooks. So we know a lot more about Columbus firsthand, primary source, than we do about a lot of other people. And Columbus was a remarkable man. You could say that Columbus Day, and I'd say Columbus Day and Thanksgiving together, are the holidays that make the other American holidays possible.
Yeah, that's
If it were not for Columbus having the vision and the conviction and the persistence over half a dozen years to get his venture sponsored, to sail across the ocean, he would be the first. Three ships staffed with a crew. It was very costly, and he needed state sponsorship. He was rejected by country after country in England, but he never gave up. And he finally got sponsored by Queen Isabella and Ferdinand, and with three ships, he was the first to sail across the Atlantic Ocean. He never discovered the American, any land that is continental of the United States. Rather, he landed at San Salvador. First thing he did on the island of San Salvador, which is the easternmost island of the Bahamas, was to erect a large wooden cross, which he did on many of the islands that he explored thereafter. That is who he was. He was a passionate evangelist.
You know, it's so interesting, too, because going back to this idea that he used to be a hero and now to many on the left, he's a big zero. You look at the recent example where at least about 100 or so statues were toppled throughout America, especially last year during the era of woke. It turns out that
we're still in that era.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, but the statue toppling stopped after a certain point when former President Trump said, look, there's going to be a big penalty to pay if you tear down one of these statues and so forth. The number one target of all the statue toppling was Christopher Columbus, far and away, far more than Robert E. Lee or, anybody related to the Confederates.
Well, it's understandable. First, to really understand all that we've been going through, we have to understand that it's really a Marxist communist effort to entirely divorce Americans from their history, from their heritage. So Columbus was an easy target because of revisionist writings about Columbus. But you have to remember Columbus teamed up with the Spaniards, who were his crew. He was the only individualist from Italy. I mean, from Genoa, Italy. He had two motivations. He was a great seafarer and explorer, and he was a passionate evangelist. He really had no interest in colonization. But because he was sponsored by the Spanish, and the crew was all Spanish, when they made four voyages to the Caribbean and to South America, and there they met with the Caribs, the Carib tribe, and the Caribbean Sea is named after the Carib tribe. The Carib tribe was absolutely brutal. They were cannibals. They would go from island to island, kill all the men, and enslave the women. Those are the people that inhabited much of the Caribbean Sea. And we know the stories of the Aztecs and the Incas, the Mayas. These were not, you know, noble savages. They were people who sacrificed children. And so when the Spaniards, and it wasn't Columbus who did the colonization, but when the Spaniards went there, they either killed or they would be killed in many cases. And life was nasty, brutish, and short. And even Isabella gave them, she said, if you don't kill them, then enslave them. In other words, don't put yourself at risk. You either have to kill them or make them your slaves. But that was not what Columbus was about. That was a Spanish agenda, and unfortunately, Columbus got really tarnished and tarred with that label. But that really you really miss the essence of who the man was by that simplistic analysis.
You did some work at the university, or some studying at the University of Chicago, correct? Way back when?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. On the south side of Chicago, which is where that school is, there's this beautiful building. It's now, the Museum of Science and Technology or whatever in Chicago, or the Museum of Science and Industry. That's what it's called. And anyway, that building, and there were all these other buildings that were built in around 1892 on the 300th anniversary of Columbus Day, the Columbian Exposition. It was a big deal. He was great. By the time you got to 1992, the 400th anniversary of Columbus, the man, as I say, was turned from, a saint virtually to a villain. And it's just amazing. But it all happened in the 20th century. And I guess the bottom line is we've gone through this period of historical revisionism. And unfortunately, it continues. And Columbus is a big victim of that revisionism.
Yes. Well, you have to understand strategically, we always have to think spiritually and strategically. And if you were wanting to destroy America, as our enemies do, Columbus would be one of the most important to destroy. Because if you destroy Columbus, then you force the renaming of everything that, all the cities, the roads, the post offices, the schools that are named after Columbus. For goodness sake, the capital of our country is the District of Columbia, named after Columbus. Should we rename our capital? If we change everything about our country, we're no longer America. And, of course, that's what our enemies want. They don't want to attack us militarily. They want to destroy us from within. And that's going on as we speak right now,
the
with critical race theory and all this other nonsense.
The capital of Ohio is Columbus.
Yes.
What's the capital?
Oh, you could go down the list. Yeah. Every state in the country has a city of Columbus. They certainly have, Columbus Avenues and so forth, and many schools. Columbus wasn't a perfect man. No one is.
Right.
But he had many attributes of character that are in short supply today. First of all, he had courage. Second, he had the willingness to persist. He never bought into groupthink. He was forever being criticized for this vision that he had, that he could cross the ocean and find a trade route to the Far East. He was ridiculed, but he stood up and he continued. He never gave up on his vision. And because of that, when he finally did get sponsorship, a new world was opened up. And that new world, as we know, he didn't discover America, but he made it possible for others to have confidence to sail west, to sail across the ocean. And it was other people that really colonized North America, and we have 13 colonies, all British colonies, by the way. And they came out of what? Out of the Protestant Reformation. They came to the New World because they had a passion for freedom. They believed in the priesthood of all believers, that all people were equal before God, and that people had unalienable rights, and they wanted to pursue their lives in a way that was not corrupted by government.
And one of the key groups you're talking about there would be the Pilgrims, who founded Plymouth, Massachusetts, when they celebrated the harvest in 1621, 400 years ago from this
400
year.
years ago. So let's talk about the Pilgrims.
Yeah, and well, you know, and that was the beginning of what we now have Thanksgiving. Go ahead.
And this is all in the book. That, you know, the Pilgrims were close to being model colonizers. They were respectful of the native Indian population. They worked alongside them and even went to their aid voluntarily when there was need. The Indians, in turn, helped the Pilgrims, and they both celebrated that first harvest, which we call Thanksgiving. But perhaps more substantially, the Pilgrims signed a peace treaty with that tribe, the Wampanoags, that lasted more than 50 years. The Pilgrims were unique among all the American settlers to have a 50-year truce that was upheld. They had rapport with the Indians. So in that sense, that was a great model for our country. Of course, we didn't always live up to it. So all of these things are part of our noble heritage, if you will. And, you know, these are acts of tolerance, generosity, and trust that are really quite remarkable and worth reflecting on today, as you say, Jerry, 400 years later. You know, think about our contemporary state of intolerance, low trust, seditious activity, and division in the 21st century. I think we need to learn from the Pilgrims and these other people.
So we see, Scott, that the Pilgrims were absolutely amazing people, and it's amazing that they survived that first winter, as you've explained. It's amazing how they made this great treaty of peace with the Indians and got along so well with them. And now here we are on the 400th anniversary of the first Thanksgiving in Plymouth itself. And that's a really a huge milestone to me in human history. But let's talk about that first Thanksgiving. What was it like?
Well, you know, you could say that Thanksgiving is the holiday that made the other American holidays possible. You know, without the Pilgrims having courage, a willingness to sacrifice and risk everything, and really absolute faith in their cause and calling, they never would have boarded that unseaworthy 90-foot Mayflower to embark on a transatlantic voyage to an unknown continent. But were it not for their dream and determination to find freedom of conscience and religion in the New World, there may have never been holidays that followed Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving is a really seminal holiday in American history. And you have to remember that it came after a brutal winter where the Pilgrims lost almost half their colony.
Right, as we talked about, as you mentioned earlier. And, yeah, that's amazing.
And their harvest was not bountiful, but the Indians were invited. They joined in, and they brought a lot of food. They were great hunters. They brought a lot of deer, and they had a 3-day festival. And there were more Indians present by a factor of more than 2 than there were Pilgrims. In other words, there were more Indians present at that 3-day Thanksgiving than there were Pilgrims, and they got along and enjoyed each other tremendously.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but I just want to point out that when people say that America does not have Judeo-Christian roots, look at the fact that Thanksgiving is an annual holiday. It's a day off. It's a national holiday, and it's,
of course,
you know, Thanksgiving to God. Scott Powell, and the website is rediscoveringamerica.net. So thank you so much for being with us, Scott. All the best.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.